Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guests on this episode are Lila Brownhart and Ella Brownhart, as well as Jefferson Hart of Secret Monkey Weekend. When Lila and Ella's father, Matt Brown, passed in 2012, Jefferson, a friend and bandmate of Matt's, began spending time with the girls and their mother, teaching the preteen Ella guitar. He eventually married the girl's mother, Laura, and with their North Carolina home providing space to write and rehearse, the trio quickly set about making their debut album with legendary producer Don Dixon, which was released in 2022. Their new album, Lemon Drop Hammer, is out June 6th and is once more produced by Dixon. That's Secret Monkey Weekend on Into Music, coming up now. So this is the second album, right? So a lot of people make one and maybe they don't come back and make a second one. So when did you know you wanted to do a new record?
We had some new songs that we had written probably 2 years ago. Let's see, the album came out 3 years ago. So I'd say maybe a year later, we were already writing songs. And we also wanted to revisit some old ones because this is not to toot my own horn, but they do like a lot of my old songs from the old bands I've been in all these years. So we picked about three from the old days that we kind of pepped up and made it more our own as opposed to how I was when I was 22.
So, and this time you went into the studio work with Don Dixon, which tell me about that, because I've heard great things about him as a producer.
Well, he's really great to work with. And, you know, he produced R.E.M., Marshall Crenshaw, The Smithereens, lots of great artists. And, I think a lot of people would feel pretty starstruck. But a few years before we started recording with him, we kind of built up a relationship when we came to a show of his.
Yeah, a friend of mine wrote a book, a guy I went to high school with, and the book had an album's worth of songs that accompanied the book, and Don produced it, had some North Carolina players like Mitch Easter, Jeffrey Dean Foster, just a lot of the all-stars from our state as part of the album. So when it came time to do a book reading, Don was set to sing some of the songs that Don co-wrote with the guy. And I guess the author asked, would we like to do a set either before or after Don? So we agreed. So that's how they met. And I had known of him since I was younger than either one of them, because he had a band called Arrogance that was very popular in our state in the Southeast. And then, of course, I later was in a band, 37 years ago, with his co-founder of that band, Robert Kirkland. So I was very close to their music anyway. So it was a real treat to be able to, you know, maybe be a closer friend of this guy. So as we got closer to the getting him on board for the first album, well, I guess first we had to ask him. So, but he said, yeah, I'd love to. And, you know, it's not a gamble to think Don Dixon's going to do something really cool with your music. And, you know, he made us sound like us, but he made it sound like a record, which is, you know, a step even further than just capturing yourselves live.
Yeah, and he's a very patient person, especially because when we recorded our first album, God, we were 17 and
14.
Yeah.
12.
Yeah, 17 and 14. So, like, we're kids that have never been in a studio before. And I think we did a good job as people who have not done this before. Yeah. He was very patient with us and knew how to guide us in a way to get the sound we wanted while not, like, overworking us or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, when we worked in that first studio, which was Mitch Easter's from Let's Active, you know, it was his renowned studio called Fidelatorium. And we were sort of in separate corners of the studio, but I could kind of see what they were doing. And later a friend took pictures of the whole session, and just to see how comfortable they looked had a lot to do with Don, had a lot to do with Mitch, and the fact that we were very comfortable with the music. So fast forward to when we recorded this album, this one that's coming up, we decided to record closer to home. And Don's approach on this album was we would be closer together. I mean, we were like within 8 feet of each other, probably. And I don't know if it made a difference in the sound, but it was just, it felt more like our live set.
Or because, like a rehearsal.
Yeah, we were making eye contact really easily. And, each song never went more than two takes because we were so well rehearsed.
So the space that you play in at home, do I have this right? Because I watched the documentary and you're kind of in a closed area at home too, right?
Yeah.
This would be in a normal house, the family room, but or the parlor if you want. But yeah. So we've turned it into, this is kind of me and Jeff's room. So this is where the guitar player's playing. If you see that black opening back there,
that's where I have my drums and stuff.
Yeah, so the drums eventually got their own room so we could play at a comfortable volume. So we lost the dining room and the den to music. Mm-hmm. But we still have another den to keep my wife happy.
And our dogs.
Yeah, our dogs, yeah.
Well, that's not bad. That's not bad to have so much of the house given over to music, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, we joke there's about a guitar in every room except for the bathroom.
Yeah, I mean, there's one. There's always a guitar within reach.
Yeah.
Always.
Nice. So, yeah, so you're kind of playing in that close proximity. That probably gives some really good energy in terms of the playing and so forth.
Yeah, we're very... I know the three of us, we signal each other and stay in tune and lockstep with each other through eye contact and tapping our feet and just also the energy of being together. I notice when we're playing gigs where we have to stand farther apart, I feel like we do worse than when we're close together.
Yeah. There's a famous video from I would say famous with the family of, I don't know, probably 2018. We were playing at a show in Raleigh. And I like the video the shows to capture, where we are at a point in time. Of course, some of those were even used in the PBS documentary. But there was one thing where Ella used her foot to signal to Lila, like, speed up, speed up. So Ella does this kick thing with her foot, and Lila looks at her with this menacing look and then sticks her tongue out. So that's how we were in the beginning before we became a little more accepting of each other's signals.
Yeah.
Lila, I know I'm not bashing on you, but you were like, hey, don't tell me what to do. I know what I'm doing. I'm 12.
I'm still like that.
Plus you're a drummer, which.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I know what I'm doing. I can keep the rhythm.
You guys get it together.
Well, this year, Lionel will be...
You follow me.
We'll be 18 in about 5 months. So, the whole Alice Cooper, I'm 18, I do what I want, might be looming on the horizon. We'll see.
Yeah.
So also speaking of North Carolina legends, Peter Holsapple joined you in the studio. I'm assuming he's probably somebody that you knew as well before.
Peter played with our dad, Matt Brown, in a band called Baron von Rumblebus, which was a children's music band of all things. So Peter played bass, my dad played drums, and we'd been friends with Peter ever since. And then independently, you knew of Peter for a long time.
Well, in that band, Peter wore like a wizard outfit, but it was really pajamas with stars on it.
Yeah.
I don't remember what kind of hat he wore, but their dad, Matt, was a robot. So he was the robot drummer. So.
Yeah. But so I had known Peter as the funny guy who dresses like a wizard and plays bass. And Jeff knew him as DB's REM.
Continental Drifter's
hero. Yeah. As his hero. So later in life, we've gotten a different perspective on him, you could say.
Yeah, so our relationship with him was similar in a way to Don's, in that they got to know him young before we became a band. And, I was, sometimes it's hard not to be starstruck by these people. You realize they're just people just like us. But, Peter was a big influence on me on songwriting and just, just the whole, a band that leaves North Carolina, goes to New York, they, end up being very influential. And I don't know. They're really large as far as our state's concerned and the history of music around here.
Well, one of the things that I love about the songs is that they're catchy. You keep it simple, focused, that's not always easy to write songs like that, right? I mean, it's actually probably a little bit harder in some ways.
Yeah, well, and Ella can probably tell you, and Lila too, that as far as I'm concerned, I like to keep it simple because that's what I like. Just like, Ella mentioned Marshall Crenshaw earlier. Marshall Crenshaw was, directly inspired by the Beatles, Buddy Holly, whatnot. That's the same stuff I loved. And to me, if you just want to get to the heart of the matter, you don't need to complicate things. I mean, on this album, I have some songs with some riffs and hooks, and I think that's part of it. It's just that quality control begins and ends with the songwriter, and I have to like it. If I don't like it, I'm just not going to insist we play it. In fact, over time, I might have a few tunes here and there that are maybe, slightly longer than 4 minutes, but I think some of the best songs are the shorter ones. And I even have, Ella knows because she's in my quote grown-up band. We had a bass player pass away and she inherited that slot in the band. But there are some songs, well, I will just not even sing a third verse because I'm just ready to move on. Like these songs don't need to be that long. I mean, when I was in my 20s, yeah, maybe I needed a third verse, but now that I'm, not in my 20s, I don't need to play for 4 minutes.
Yeah. And I know you encourage me because sometimes I've come to you like the song Things You Threw Away, which will be on the album. I came to you and it had very complicated changes and it still kind of does, but you were need to pare it down.
Yeah. Ella is, like much. I said, young songwriter, you're exploring all the options and sometimes you decide to keep those options. And then I was working with Ella to maybe we could make this two chords instead of four chords or that kind of thing. So in that way, we have sort of a, I don't want to make the comparison, but just in the manner that Lennon and McCartney would look at stuff and go, that bridge doesn't really work, does it? They go, yeah, Paul. Yeah. So that's kind of how we go about it when we co-write, which we started to do a lot more.
Yeah.
What was that like to start writing songs, knowing that you had an experienced songwriter in the house already? Was it?
It made it a lot less scary because, I mean, songwriting is such a vulnerable thing. And you had to start with no help at all.
Right.
It was just you. So I am really lucky that I have somebody who knows what they're doing and can say, okay, this is how you can fix it to make it actually a good song.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually pretty humbling.
But it's good. It's good. Yeah. It's like having if you're like the author, it's like having an editor in the house.
Lila is really good with helping with lyrics, and sometimes Lila will just have the germ of an idea anyway. Like several of our songs over this upcoming album and the last one were just little ideas that she had. There was a little song she would hum to herself from the time I met her when she was six. It was like, hum, num, honey, num, num, honey, num, 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 num. And, a couple of years later, I was like, that is a song. So we fleshed it out. But then with We Can Be Friends on the new album, Lila, we sat down and we just kind of threw ideas out about what it's like to have when you're preschool and you're meeting people and your friends and you bond over the smallest things. Like, hey, my dad has a coffee cup like this. We can be friends, My dad's mouse is white. We can be friends. So that was what that was about. But Lila will reject lyrics, so therefore Lila is a very good editor, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I've said before that I read somewhere that Alex Chilton had this sort of motto that he went by, try not to suck. So that's what we try not to do. Like the end product cannot suck.
Wow, very cool. Yeah. So this record's going to come out like at the beginning of summer, and I'm assuming by that point any sort of school obligations are behind you.
Yeah, I'm graduating from college this May. I'm getting my bachelor's in history, so I'm very excited about that. Lila's a lucky duck.
Yeah, I'm homeschooled, so my schedule's pretty flexible, and I'm probably going to finish up my year around the same time as Ella.
Yeah.
Frees
So,
us up to play a lot of shows.
yeah, I'm the issue with
Yeah.
scheduling.
That was going to be my next question. So does this leave it open for you to kind of maybe get in the van and hit some places outside of home a little bit more?
Yeah, we're touring in August. We're going on this a little East Coast tour with this band called the Professor Fuzz 63 out of
Dallas.
Dallas. I always forget which Texas city. And they're really sweet people. They're a family too. They're a mother, father, and son. And so we're going to be going to, let's see, Baltimore, Washington, D.C.,
Richmond, New
Richmond,
York.
New York City, somewhere in New Jersey, I
Yeah,
believe.
Montclair, I think.
Yeah.
And also Philly, don't you just say Swarthmore?
Yeah,
And
Swarthmore.
maybe somewhere in Philadelphia too. So yeah, that'll be our sort of East Coast thing. But we've been known to go further south too. We've hit Athens, Atlanta, Charlotte. We actually have our first gig at the coast this year, which is great. We play with I guess they're a national band called Southern Culture on the Skids. We're playing with them in Wilmington, North Carolina for the first time. And their music and our music match really easily because again, they're extremely catchy and it's a trio just like us. But yeah, that's another band that I looked up to when I was their age.
So I'm sure you get this question a lot, but I come from a large family. I have five older brothers, and I can't imagine like us walking up from our childhood home up to the grocery store on the corner to get milk without a fight breaking out over something. So how does that work being in a family where, because and I mean good natured fights with my siblings, but we're bound to have disagreements. So how do you keep it kind of cohesive in a family group?
It really helps. Me and Lila have always been best friends. Like, we've always gotten along really well, and always been really close. We hang out a lot, so we have a good understanding of each other and knowing how to not push each other's buttons and what respect we require from each other. So I think that really helps the band quite a bit, that we there's no rivalry here. We love each other and we get along.
One of the things that I try to pass along is if you're going to get angry or upset, just get it over with fast and then just, settle it, move on. I mean, we're all humans and we're going to have our emotions, but don't hang on to that too long. We've all had a
Emotions,
little bump ups, but just there's no need for a morning thing to extend into the afternoon, as far as I'm concerned.
But that's very cool that you have this shared space for music. That has to feel good that you know that this is something you can kind of come home and do. If one of you picks up an instrument, one of the other ones will probably fall in line shortly after and start playing, and that maybe that's a whole evening at home or something.
Yeah, we just, we can play at any time. I mean, they grew up in the same house. Their grandparents both died almost behind each other a couple years ago. But so Ella is taking care of their house, which is, I like to say, you can almost throw a baseball to the house. It's so close. So Ella is here every day, whether we're, playing with the dogs, visiting Lila to see what's happening. And I drive them both everywhere they need to go. So there's, we're just always in each other's lives from the time we get up, really.
It's nice to be moved out, but not fully moved out, like having my own space, but still having my family right here when I need them. So.
Well, one other thing that I really like in the songs, is that there's a sense of humor in there, and I'm guessing that this is also something that kind of helps with the family dynamics too, is that you have maybe kind of a shared sense of humor.
Yeah, we're pretty silly.
Those two watch a lot more YouTubes and Instagram or TikTok than I do. So they're always repeating memes together, things that I have no idea what they're talking about, but I can tell they're really enjoying the laugh. Yeah. So yeah, it's like they're in joke and I'm just like, I kind of admire it though, because you know, there's definitely a sisterhood going on there. And but yeah, I, as far as humor, that song We Can Be Friends is a good example. I really did have the neighborhood children in mind, but there was a family that we adored and they lived next to us. And it was just like this street full of kids and they were so lucky to have that. But there was this line about, you know, getting some water from the garden hose with your next door neighbor with 11 toes. And I, that
none
was,
of which is true.
No, is it? I made that up. Is it really true?
No, I said it's not.
Oh, it's not true. Okay. I thought, oh my, okay. I didn't want to step on that foot, but yeah. Yeah, yeah.
No, yeah, yeah. I mean, even though that didn't happen, there's definitely inspirations in real life.
And Lemon Drop Hammer, the song itself, which is the title track, the incident really did happen. My wife was trying to break up these lemon drops with a hammer because they had melted in the summer, and she was trying to break them up so she could actually eat them. And I was in the next room and kept hearing this banging noise. I'm going, what in the world could she be doing with a hammer that she didn't ask me to intervene with? And there she was, you know, smashing up candy. So there, that was a song title at least. And it was up to me to fill in the blank. So honestly, the rest of the song, it makes little sense. It's just a reason to have a fun song called Lemon Drop Hammer.
You've been listening to a conversation with Secret Monkey Weekend. The band's new album, Lemon Drop Hammer, is out June 6th. You can learn more about the band at their official website, secretmonkeyweekend.com. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. You can also send us questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.